All right.
Nick!
Gentlemen!
Nick's your buddy. Kind of guy you can drink a beer with.
Start your engine!
Found my papa's son wandering out a smoking gun. Now some of you would live through me and lock me up and throw away the key, or just find a place to hide away and hope that I'll just go away. But I feel alright. I feel alright tonight.
All right, all right, all right. Good morning, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate studio on the seventh floor of the Trib Tower, as we are every weekday morning here from 2 to 5 a.m. I'm your overnight dude. At 5 o'clock, it's Steve Grzanich with the opening bell, and at 6 o'clock, the one, the only, the awesome Steve Cochran for your morning drive. Our phone number and text number is the same, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. You can also check us out on Twitter, at Nick D Show. Facebook, best way to stay connected with us, facebook.com/Nick D Show. It's interactive. It's constantly updated. It's happening while the show is happening, and you can be a part of the show there as well. With over 12,000 other fans, and we have the most of any show on GN, so we appreciate that. Thank you very much. Facebook.com/Nick D Show. Like us right now. And you can also check out our podcast. If you can't listen live, second best way to listen is on our podcasts, and a lot of people do that. We thank you for that. Every second of the show is podcast the next morning, and you can download them and listen to them. You can check all of our podcasts out at WGNradio.com. Subscribe at iTunes. It's free. It will automatically be sent to your device, and you can listen anytime at your leisure, bro. All right, it's Thursday morning. I do have to say hello to my producer this morning. My producer this morning is Dan, but Dan Long, not Dan Shagrew. Hello, Dan.
Hello, good morning.
How are you?
Doing all right.
Dan Shagrew had to take the morning off. And by the way, that means that there is no Triple Play Thursday this morning, because if we don't have DJ Shagrew, we cannot do the Triple Play Thursday. So we will be handling the bumps from here. Dan Shagrew will be back tomorrow, but he had to take the night. He had to take this morning off. So the very capable Dan Long, who worked with me for a while on Saturday nights, produced my Saturday night. How long did we work together? A year?
Yeah, we held it down on Saturday nights. About a year.
Yeah, about a year. That was fun, man. So thank you for stepping in for Mr. Shagrew.
Yeah, no, it's always good to be back in the world of Nick D.
Oh, God. That's terrifying. I guess it's gotten to the point now where my producers have to be named Dan. I guess that's so I don't forget. Because I'm an idiot. I forget how to tie my shoe every other day. So I need a producer who's I could just yell, Dan, and it could be anybody, as long as I can yell Dan. So, okay, Dan, welcome to the show, buddy.
I do respond to that.
Good. I'm glad you do. tell everybody what shows you work on here. You started with me, actually.
I did, yeah. Started with you.
And then you moved on to bigger and better things.
Yeah, and I stayed in our old Saturday nighttime slot.
That's
now,
right.
So it's me and Dave Hoekstra now.
He's great.
The Nocturnal Journal.
That's going well. That's got to be fun.
And, yeah, it's a lot of fun. Yeah. And Dave's actually on the road now. He's working on a book about, you know, Route 66 and traveling and stuff. So he's got this Ford van that he tricked out. And he's sending me tape and stuff. And actually, Broham, Mike Steven, is filling in while he's away. So we're playing back some tape and we're doing some live stuff.
Oh,
and,
so Broham is Mike Steven is filling in while Dave's on his road trip. Is he going to be gone a long time? Is it the whole summer?
No, that's just two more weeks, actually.
Oh, okay.
So I think
just two more shows.
Yeah.
Okay. So you only have to put up with Broham for two more shows. Okay. That's good. Dave is a wonderful guy, and I'm glad that he's such a great addition to this station. I think he's just I love him. And who else do you work on?
We get your weekly sports fix, The Beat.
The Beat.
Weekends 3 to 7 on Saturdays, 3 to 6 on Sundays.
All right. Cool, man. Well, good for you. You're here on the weekends, and so is the guy in the newsroom who's filling in for Vic Vaughn. That's Roger Badish.
Well, hi there.
Hi, Roger. Roger, you work on the weekends here at
yes, I do.
WGN. Vic is off because he went to the what the hell, the Dome Awards?
Silver Dome.
Right.
Yeah, down in, I think it's in Champaign this time.
Right. He won, from what I understand.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very cool. Very cool. Good. So I'm glad he took the night off.
Did you give him any tips? Because you've won before.
I've won twice. Apparently, yeah. I didn't win last night, though.
Oh, jeez.
Well, I don't. Would I have heard?
A bunch of idiots down there.
Would I have heard?
You would have been invited.
No. But here's the thing.
You would have been invited.
I wasn't invited the other two times when I won.
Oh, crap.
So, I don't know. Dang. Well, here's the thing, though. Yeah. You can't yell at them because the other two nominees were also GN people.
Well, that's true. Different categories, though.
No,
right?
Same category.
What?
There was.
Really?
I don't even know what the hell the category was. What was the category that I was nominated in? Because it was me and Patty and Roe.
I think it's personalities.
Personality, ooh. Whatever that is. I don't know what that means. But evidently,
your personality.
The radio personality.
Right. Yeah, right.
Okay.
Yeah. Market radio.
But here's the thing, but someone here won. Someone at GN won that award because the only three nominees were me and Patty and Roe. So either Patty won or Roe won.
Well, all right, I'm going to go look it up.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know. I didn't, you know.
I'll look it up.
Okay. And but I know that Vic won because they on Vic's girlfriend's page,
mm-hmm.
She posted a picture of the award.
Oh.
And said congratulations to Vic. And
cool.
I said, all right, Vic, good for you, man. So he took the night off, and it was worth taking the morning off because he won an award.
Yeah.
Very cool for him. And it was for the news series that he did about military veterans.
That's right.
Of which he knows plenty. He mm-hmm. wrote and produced that, and he won himself an Illinois Broadcaster Award, or Association Award.
Yeah.
Good for him. Very, very cool. But Roger is here this morning. So Dan Long and Roger are here, but someone I work with all the time, it didn't take off tonight.
Yeah, no, I stayed.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. You sound delighted.
I was like, maybe. I guess
maybe,
I'll come
well, in. You know, if Dan and Vic aren't going to be there, what the hell's the point? That's Esmeralda Leon. Hi, Esmeralda.
Hello.
How are you? Were you doing all right? Close to taking the morning off just because?
No.
Okay.
No. I didn't get nominated for anything. So.
That's the thing. Well, I did, and I'm here. And evidently, I didn't win, so I don't know.
Well, how do you know you didn't win?
I don't know. I'm just assuming. I didn't think I was going to win anyway.
I mean, they don't call you.
I don't know.
They don't go, hey, guess what?
That's how they sell tickets to the thing. Probably.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
All right, so here is, GN was up for a bunch of awards.
Well, every year.
Yeah.
Evidently.
Let's see. Best. All right, so he was for best radio series or documentary, Vic.
Vic won,
yeah,
yes.
Compelled to entry, compelled to serve military veterans.
Right.
And also, he was up against our own Dean Richards.
Okay.
Yeah, he was worried about that because he said that Dean was, you know, killing it this year.
Well, Dean has won every award you could possibly win this year.
Right.
Yeah.
I think we need to have a little room for other people because I believe Dean won 619 awards this year. Just in the past month.
Yeah.
Okay.
Is that it? Oh, here we go. Best radio personality.
Yes.
All three finalists were from here. Nobody, no other
right.
radio
we know
station.
That, Roger.
Yeah, but they haven't posted the awards yet.
Well, when did it happen?
Last night.
That's why Vic took the
night
off.
Yeah, I'm trying to find, and it just...
No, I know.
It's
that's
not
why,
showing
yeah,
anything.
Yeah, because they're not going to do it. What do you think? They're CNN? No, they're all still partying or whatever
yeah,
they're doing.
Probably. And we also had in the best radio local broadcast team, the Hamp and OB show with Cause.
Did it win?
Up against Steve Cochran.
Did they? Who
we
won?
We don't know.
We don't know yet.
How do we know that Vic won then?
Because he posted it.
Because you
it.
Said.
Oh, because he posted it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because you said, Nick.
All right. No, he posted it.
He posted
I
it.
Know, I saw a picture of the actual award.
I'm looking
know,
at the Silver Dome site, and they have not posted
oh,
the winner's
right.
I just, yeah. Nick, I think it's funny that you, well, how do we know that he won? It's because you said that you saw an award that he won.
No, I know, but I'm saying it's like I thought Roger was looking at the Silver Dome Awards, and the only one that they posted was Vic's.
No.
Yeah,
like,
just now, his.
There's like 60 awards that night, and the only way they were like, the only one we care about is Vic.
Yeah,
they
right.
were so make enamored.
Make sure the country knows that Vic won the award.
Why wouldn't he post everyone else?
I don't, he
because
was there.
Yeah.
He's got no time for that.
Yeah.
Who else went down
60
there?
60 thing. No one.
He see, yesterday morning, he said that he was the only one from GN going and that he would have to haul back all the hardware. That's what he said yesterday.
Wow.
So, you know, I actually said, hey, I posted on his Facebook page. I said, hey, congratulations, Vic. And he hit a like on that. Now, don't you think if Vic... Hold on. This is logic talking. Right. Don't you think that if Vic saw that and said, like, he would have also, had I won, he would have said, oh, congratulations to you, too, because you won. Don't you think he would have done that?
One would think
which
that.
Which indicates to me that I did not win.
Let you down easy.
Which is, I don't, it doesn't, one way or the other.
I know.
Well, also, maybe he just didn't want to talk to you at that point
Ooh.
In time.
Ooh.
Ooh. That's not talking. That's not talking.
That's texting. That's
it's just
clicking.
Like, it's whatever.
Yeah.
But that's what I mean. Like, that's what you do. Oh, you go, okay, thank you. And then you leave. And then, because he will probably, he'll see you tomorrow.
Yeah. I mean, I don't care. I'm just, you know, I just, I was, when I thought Roger was reading that Vic won from the actual website. And I was like, wait a minute. That's. Anyway, well, congratulations to Vic and whoever the hell else won. Because apparently there were, because, I mean, seriously, every year GN, deservedly so, gets a ton of nominations. And then every once in a while an idiot wins, like me, twice. I don't know how that happened, but there you go. All right, well, congratulations to everybody. Dan, did you win?
Actually, yeah.
Yeah? Good. All right, cool. Dan won.
It's on my Facebook page.
It's on his Facebook page. You can't deny it. All right. Listen, we're going to take a break. When we come back, I'm going to talk about this O.J. Simpson documentary. And then it's called O.J. Made in America. It's part of the 30 for 30 documentary series by ESPN. It's a 5-part, 8-hour series. I have watched 4 parts, now available on demand. You can watch it at any time. I've watched 4 parts. I got 1 part left, which I will watch in the morning. It is, without question, one of the most amazing and staggering documentary filmmaking pieces I've ever seen in my life. It's unbelievably great. If you've seen it, 312-981-7200. But that brings me to the point I want to talk about. Where were you when? Where were you when? Now, we'll talk about the O.J., the verdict. We'll talk about the Bronco chase and then tons of other stuff. When big historical things have happened or big newsworthy moments have happened in and around the world, where were you when those happened? You know, like obviously 9/11 or Michael Jackson's death or the Berlin Wall coming down or Obama being elected or, you know, many, many, many other things. I have a list here of where were you when moments. 312-981-7200. We can start out with the Bronco chase. We can start out with the verdict, the OJ stuff, and then move on to other where were you when moments. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Talk and text. Tell us where you were when big historical moments took place and how you got the news. Morning, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. All right, it's Thursday. No Triple Play Thursday because DJ Shagru is not here. Dan, what is your Dan Long? You have done a Friday fly jams with us. What's your fly jam name again?
Yeah, you know what? I'm trying to remember. I can't.
We gave you one though.
Yeah,
right?
I did get one. And
does anybody remember Dan's fly jam name? Esmeralda, do you remember his fly jam name?
Nope.
Did it have anything to do with you like Danny Long Legs or something? I'm just
no. I don't think it was that. I'm trying to.
I know you were here on a Friday.
I was here on a Friday, and it wasn't like complex or obscure or anything.
Maybe a listener remembers. Text it or call us at 312-981-7200. But Dan Long is here. No Triple Play Thursday. That'll return next week. But we are here. 312-981-7200. And we are talking about where were you when? Big historic moments. Where were you when certain things happened? I can't. Recommend this documentary enough. Seriously, it is. Esmeralda, are you interested in watching it? Do you have access to see it?
I don't know.
I mean, it's 8 hours.
Right.
It's 5 parts. It's 8 hours.
I've never really thought about O.J. Simpson too much.
Well, this will make it. It's not really. It's an amazing piece of history, that is beautifully put together. And it is remarkably thorough and compelling. I mean, it's just, It's really, really riveting. You know, as soon as the part you're watching is over, you turn it on, you go to the next one. The great thing about watching it on the on-demand, because Xfinity on-demand at least has all five parts available. It's being shown on ESPN this week, so you can watch it. And the last part is on Saturday night. It airs on Saturday night on ESPN. It's 2 hours with commercials. But the thing about watching it on Xfinity is that it's uncensored. So they're, you know, like the F-bombs that are dropped and whatever, the swearing that's happening, it's not beeped. There are no commercials. There are no interruptions. So it plays like a 95-minute documentary. I would highly recommend that you watch it straight through like that, because you don't – like every time there was a commercial break, I watched the first two parts well on my DVR, and I fast-forwarded through the commercials. But every time there was a break, I felt like interrupted. It interrupted the flow and the design of the documentary, which is so beautifully constructed. So I highly, highly recommend watching it on demand or the ESPN, I think, app. If you get the ESPN app, all of them are available uncut, uncensored. So that's the way I think you should watch it. But it's really, Roger, have you seen it?
You know, the first one was actually shown on ABC.
Right. It was on Saturday night on ABC, and then they went to ESPN.
I had forgotten it was on, and I was flipping around, and I caught it. So I caught a big chunk of it when I got to it. And you're right. Even with the commercials, because they would cut at just the right spot.
Yeah.
And even with the commercials, I was riveted.
It is unbelievable.
Yeah.
And so incredibly thorough. And there's still a full 2 hour, 95 minutes left.
Mm-hmm.
And they're at, right now, at the end of part four, they're at the verdict.
Oh.
So it goes way beyond that. And it starts out with OJ at USC.
Right.
And it covers his college career. It covers the Buffalo Bills. Covers what's going on in the world racially, what's happening in LA. It is an astounding piece of historical work.
Mm-hmm.
And puts the OJ trial, which I think a lot of people, you know, like Esmeralda, you're like, I don't care about OJ. This is a documentary that puts the OJ, however superficial it was, people thought it was something that you don't care about. But this documentary beautifully puts it into historical context and how important it was at that time in the country, and specifically in Los Angeles, what was happening in Los Angeles in the early 90s.
Yeah, very riveting. The
it's an
original
amazing,
trial.
Yeah.
I remember I was at Evanston Township High School teaching at the time.
Right.
And everyone who could get to a TV had the thing on.
Right. Well, we're going to talk about that. I got a break here because we got the news coming up. But I want to talk about where were you when. And we'll talk about first, like, the Bronco, and then, like, the verdict. And did you watch the trial? And if you're not watching OJ Made in America, the ESPN thing, I can't tell you, seriously, I can't tell you what a monumental piece of filmmaking and television this is. One of the most important pieces of television I've seen maybe ever. We'll take a break, and the news is coming up in just a couple minutes. Morning, everybody. Hi. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Overnight Dude, Monday through Friday, 2 a.m. to 5 a.m. Thursday, it is not Triple Play Thursday. That'll be back next week. Dan Shugrue is off tonight. He'll be back tomorrow. Dan Long will be filling in this morning. Our phone number is 312-981-7200. Send your texts there as well. We're going to read a bunch of those that are coming in. 312-981-7200, talk and text. I was talking about the OJ Made in America ESPN 30 for 30 documentary. Dan, I know you're a sports dude. You've seen these 30 for 30 documentaries, haven't you?
Oh, yeah.
They're amazing.
Yeah. I'm the Ric Flair one is coming up, too. I'm looking forward to that one.
Oh, that's right. Do you know when that one is?
You know what? I don't know. Oh. It might still be a ways away, because I think I just saw they were still filming some talking heads for it. But
I hope that's 5 hours long. I hope that's 8 hours long.
8 hours of Marriott bar stories.
Yeah, just no. But the one on the one on the 85 Bears was amazing.
Yeah, that was great.
It was amazing, and they've done some really great work.
Oh yeah.
But this one is just. It's not. I mean, this just goes way beyond. This is an incredible documentary about an historical, very strange moment in American history.
It's got to be probably the most in-depth or like longest piece that they've done in that series.
Without question. And the most thorough and the most talking heads. I mean, there are hundreds and hundreds of people that they interviewed for this. And they got everybody who, if they're not, if they weren't dead, they haven't died, everybody is interviewed. Like all the key players are interviewed. And it is a remarkable piece of work. It really is. But it got me to thinking about like where we were during the OJ thing and where we were when we found out about other historical things. So let's do the OJ thing. Let's start with you, Dan. Bronco Chase.
You know, I don't have a clear memory of the Bronco Chase because it was, what, 94?
94. It was June 1994.
So I was five.
Oh, you were five. Okay, all right. Okay, you were five.
But like the OJ case, really, it's one of the first like memories of major events that I have.
Right.
And like can place into context somewhere.
Right. So as like a little kid, you can remember.
Right. Like,
yeah.
I never knew OJ as, you know, the
right.
guy from Naked Gun or the football player. He was OJ. He was always OJ, the guy from the trial.
Right.
The guy that Norm MacDonald made fun of on Saturday Night Live.
And that got him fired from SNL because he made way too many. And even after the OJ trial, like 2 years after the OJ trial, he's still making OJ murder jokes, despite the fact that one of the higher ups at GE was like OJ's best friend.
Yeah.
And threatened to fire Norm MacDonald. And finally, Norm MacDonald's, I don't care. I'm just going to keep, you know, Lorne Michaels warned him. Lorne was like, you know, Norm, you got to shut up, man. They're serious about this. And then they canned him. So, yeah, okay, I can understand that. You know, it probably is the same sort of memory that I have, because I'm much older than you, Dan. The same sort of fuzzy, but obviously this is a big deal memory that I have of the first moonwalk. I have that was in 69, so I was four. But I remember that. I have no specific,
right?
Like, oh, I was, you know, sitting in front of the TV watching it. I don't even know if we had a TV at that time, but I just remember we did have a TV, I'm pretty sure. But I just have a fuzzy memory as a little kid knowing that that was a big deal. So, Esmerella, what about you with OJ? You were how old?
I was 11.
You were 11. Okay. So do you remember the Bronco chase?
I remember the chase because I remember being outside playing, and then we all came inside because we heard about this, and I had no clue who he was. Mm-hmm. I just thought it was crazy. I was like, "Whoa, this guy is just." They think he murdered some people, and now he's just they're
right.
following his truck around and all that. So I didn't really. I didn't really have a background for him. I may have seen the naked guns, but
sure.
I don't think I put the two together. I think
now,
later on in your, I go, oh, look, that's OJ.
So being 11, then, of course, the trial was not part of your life then. Like, an 11-year-old kid doesn't really give a crap about
no,
the trial.
No, I wasn't. I mean, because the fact that I didn't know who it was.
Right.
It didn't
right.
register on,
right.
on my... my view at the time.
Okay. All right, Roger, what about you? Bronco Chase, where were you?
I think I was at home watching it. I can't remember specifically, but if I was anywhere watching it, it was probably home. When did you say it was, 94 again?
June of 94, yeah.
June of 94?
Yes.
Yeah, I was probably home watching it.
Okay. And what about the verdict?
The verdict, definitely. I was teaching a class on library science, how to use the library, to high school students at Evanston Township High School. We were in a lecture room, and we just popped the TV on, and
right.
a bunch of adults came running in. And
I think a lot of people who were in school that day watched it. I think
mm-hmm.
a lot of high schools especially let the kids watch the verdict.
Yeah.
I was for the Bronco Chase. I was at the time I was living at the Honeybee Complex, and I was living with Mr. Oaken and Mr. Scott Oaken, and we had followed the story the when he first got arrested and everything,
mm-hmm.
and we were like, oh my god, OJ might have killed two people. And you know, we were, because obviously I knew who OJ, you know, I'm 50, so of course I know who OJ was. And and so we were like stunned. And that night, it was a Friday because we went, a bunch of us went to the Factory Theater. This is when the Factory Theater was up in Rogers. Well, they're in Rogers Park now, but earlier Rogers Park when they were right around the corner from the Loyola L stop. And we went to go see a play, a terrible, terrible play that two of our friends were in. And we went to see it because they were in it. And it was a two-act. I don't know how the hell they got away with two acts. But it was a two-act. And it was this terrible play. And one of our friends was in drag. And it was a really bad drag performance. And it was a really horrendous, unfunny play that was in our space. It was in our – because, you know, they rented from us at that time. The factory was owned – you know, we leased out the space to other people. Yeah. And so it was this, another theater company came in to do this show. And a couple of our friends were in it. And we went. And I was – it was horrendous. It was horrible. So there's a liquor store right down the street from the Loyola L Stop, which is also a tap room. And I can't remember the name of it. Do you anybody know?
Boy, I've been by it's that on, it, so many times.
It's on, what is the street that I'm thinking of? It's on the Sheridan. It's on Sheridan.
Yeah, right.
All right, so it's on Sheridan.
It's just north
it's
of the...
It's just north. It's like right. five doors north.
Yeah.
And it's a liquor store slash tap room. And we used to go there, you know, and drink before and after shows and stuff like that. And so that night, the first act was so terrible that a couple of my friends and I said, okay, in order to get through the second act, we've got to go get booze. That was, you know, that was what we thought. It was terrible. We can't leave because our friends are in this.
Right.
But we're seriously going to handle this by getting a little sauced. So we go down to the liquor store slash bar, whatever that the name of that place. If anybody knows, 312-981-7200, if you know the name of that that place, text or call us. So we go in. I go to the liquor store. But the first thing I notice is that in the tap room, which was to the right, like there was an entrance to the liquor store, and then you could see the tap room, the bar, and you could hear a pin drop. Now, this was during the NBA Finals. This happened during the NBA Finals. I can't remember who was playing, but it was happening during the NBA Finals. And we thought the place was going to be pretty raucous because it's a basketball game. It's the NBA Finals. But we walk in. Everybody, you can hear a pin drop. Everybody, including the guy who was working in the tap room or working in the liquor store part, was in the tap room, and they're all watching the TV. And I'm like, wow, something must really be happening in this basketball game or something, because like the liquor store part of it was empty. The tap room part was really full. Not a word was being said, and everyone was looking up at the TVs. So we walk in. We were going to go straight to get, you know, our beer or whatever we were going to have to drink during the second act of the show. But then we walked in and we looked up at the TV and we saw the basketball game in a small screen in the corner of the television.
Mm-hmm.
And the Bronco chase and the big part taking up the entire screen. And so I was like, what the hell is going on? And so people were like, you don't know? OJ's got a gun to his head and he's trying to get away from the cops. And they said, this has been going on for like an hour. And and I was like, what? And I couldn't believe it. And so we so wanted to just stay there and watch what was happening. But, you know, the people back at the theater who were doing the show had no idea what was going on. Because back then, obviously, there were no cell phones and you couldn't,
right.
you know, turn your phone on and go, oh, my God, OJ's driving down down the highway. So we watched as much as we could before we could go back to the theater. And we grabbed our booze and went back. And then we ended up, you know, we watched the rest of the show. And then afterwards, we went to the bar again. And I was convinced that OJ was dead. I was convinced that he either killed himself.
He had gotten home by then?
No, he was on when we left. He was in the car, but it was already known the cops are chasing him. He's got a gun to his head in the car. So when we go back to the theater, we watch the show. We're completely distracted, one, by the show being crappy, and two, by like, oh, my God, this insanity is happening right now. And so afterwards, we went to the bar and told everybody, meet us at the bar. We got to go back to the bar. So we went to the bar. We get in there, and I'm like, well, what happened? And they're like, well, he gave himself up, and he's in custody.
Oh. All right.
And so I missed all that.
Yeah.
But I was convinced that whole time after we left to go back, I was like, okay, O.J. Simpson is dead. O.J. Simpson either blew his head off or the cops got up to him and the cops killed him. Right. I was convinced of that. So that I'll never forget that. Of course, I forgot the name of the play. I just know it sucked. That's the only thing that I know.
Well, you would have forgotten the name of the play
exactly.
Even if
nothing
happened.
Had happened. Right. So,
how about Bruno's Lounge?
It actually is it Bruno's?
Bruno's Lounge. I'm looking on the map right now, and
I think it might be Bruno's.
Just north. Yeah, it's the
Bruno's.
Only bar that's listed there.
Has anybody called in?
Somebody did call in, and he said maybe it was the Oasis.
No, it's not the Oasis.
Okay.
No. I'm very familiar with the Oasis. The Oasis is where you went when Bruno's closed. The Oasis was a 4 o'clock bar.
Oh.
It was further north. It was by the 400 Theater.
Yeah,
No,
Bruno's is real close to...
Yeah, no, that's what it is. It's Bruno's. So anyway, that's where I saw the Bronco Chase. And the verdict, I was home with my first ex-wife, Wendy, and I had bartended the night before, and the verdict came in the afternoon. I can't remember what time, but I want to say it was like 11 a.m. or something like that.
It was early.
And I was still in bed because I had worked. I got home at like 4:30 in the morning or something. I had bartended the night before. And so my ex-wife was in the other room watching it. And I'm laying in bed, and she goes, Nick. And I kind of wake up, and she goes, Nick. I go, what? She goes, not guilty. And I go, what? She said, not guilty. And I got out of bed, and then I just started watching TV from that point on. Those are the two distinct memories I have, Bronco Chase, verdict. So
I remember the circus of media around that whole thing.
Because
that was the big story when nothing was going on in the courtroom.
Listen, and all of that, all of that is covered in beautiful, excruciating detail in this documentary. What an unbelievable circus it was, and how it was manipulated, especially on the defensive Dream Team's end. It's fascinating stuff. I'm telling you, this documentary is amazing. It's an important piece of American documentary filmmaking. It's absolutely brilliant. All right, so where were you? 312-981-7200. Send your text in. We'll read those. And if you want to call in, 312-981-7200. We'll start with OJ, and then we'll go down to some other big events. Where were you when? Let's start with the Bronco Chase and the verdict of the OJ Simpson trial. And I can't recommend OJ Made in America, this ESPN documentary, highly enough. It's an amazing piece of work. All right, 312-981-7200. Talk and text us. We'll be right back. Morning, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower. And how you doing? We're here till 5 o'clock, and we're talking about where were you when? And we're going to get to some bigger events, and we'll talk to everybody here about where they were when certain big news stories happened and how you heard about them and what you were experiencing at the time. We're starting out with the OJ verdict and the OJ Bronco Chase because of this extraordinary documentary that you can see on ESPN throughout the week and in Xfinity On Demand. All five parts are shown uncut and interrupted. It's called OJ Made in America, one of the best things I've ever seen on television, ever, and one of the best documentary pieces of work I've ever seen. So 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Text in your memories or call in at 312-981-7200. Before we get back to the phones and the texts and the stories, Des Plaines is the next stop on the WGN Radio Hometown Voices Tour presented by Allstate. Join Justin Kaufman for a live broadcast of The Download this Friday, June 17th, tomorrow, from 7 p.m. to 11 p.m. at Taste of Des Plaines. He'll help kick off this year's event featuring live entertainment, food, beverages, and activities for the whole family. Plus, you'll get a taste of Des Plaines' best restaurants from grass-fed prime beef burgers to homemade tacos and barbecue. Parking and admission is free. It's just steps from the metro station. Visit the events page at WGNRadio.com for details. The WGN Radio Hometown Voices Tour is presented by Allstate, Chicago's own good hands. So make sure you check that out tomorrow night from 7 to 11 in Des Plaines, a live broadcast of The Download with Justin Kaufman right here on WGN. All right, 312-981-7200 is the phone number. If you want to jump in with any of your thoughts on where you were when certain events happened. You know, one of the weirdest ones was when Michael Jackson died. Esmeralda, where were you when you found out that Michael Jackson died?
I was at home. I was working. I was still on the morning show. Because when did he die?
2009. June of 2009.
Okay. So, yeah, we were months away from being fired. but I remember because he had died in the afternoon. I remember I was home by then. It was about 3, I'm assuming.
It was in the afternoon. Yes, it was.
Yeah, and I was just sitting at home watching TV, and it just came up on the TV. And I couldn't believe it.
You were.
Well, no, because he was still. He was in the hospital for like a little bit.
They had reported that he was in the hospital.
Right. So I had seen it from the beginning and been like, oh my gosh, I hope he's okay. And then like finally, yeah.
So what, now Michael Jackson, I think had a, you know, probably a bigger impact on you than he did on me. I mean, for me, Michael Jackson is in the Jackson 5 and he released one really good solo record. And that's pretty much it for me when it comes to Michael Jackson. Like Thriller didn't really impact me. Anything he did after Thriller, I have no real memory of. But for you, I would imagine like Thriller must have been a huge thing for you.
I wouldn't say it was huge, but he's the type of pop star that I just, he always existed.
Yep.
Like, he was always there, and I honestly, I couldn't imagine life without him being there, which
right.
is weird to say, but
right.
I never, it was, he's the type of personality and his superstardom was the type of thing where, like, he's not going to die ever.
Yeah.
He's going to live forever and
right.
just be who he is, be the kooky, weird guy.
Right. So, it had a big impact on you then when you found out he died.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it was a thing of like, you don't even think about that. You
right.
don't think about him dying ever.
Well, you know, it's weird because you have lived your whole life without Elvis being alive or John Lennon being alive,
mm-hmm.
which to me is very strange. I don't know. That's just me because I'm an old dude. And it's like, you know, when people are like, yeah, you know, John Lennon, when I find out that people were never alive during John Lennon, when John Lennon was alive, I'm like, wow. And now there are people who weren't alive. You know, there's a lot of people alive who weren't alive when George Harrison was never alive when they were alive.
Mm-hmm.
Kurt Cobain was never alive when they were alive. And these are things that, you know, that have a big impact. But I'll tell you, the reason why I bring up the Michael Jackson one, it was so weird for me, was it was the first time that I really experienced how quickly social media hits. One of the very first times, this was in June of 2009, I was... when I found out about it, I was in a Jimmy John's. I was at the Jimmy John's down here on Illinois, or where, you know, where's the Nordstrom's building? Grand, on Grand. So I was in the Jimmy John's on Grand. Okay, and I was about to meet my wife, Heather, my ex-wife. We were going to see Steve Earle that night. Steve Earle was playing at the Park West. So I was at work for some reason. I was here. I think maybe I went to a screening and then I stopped off and did some work here. And then I went over to Jimmy John's to grab a sandwich and I was going to walk up and maybe catch a bus and go to Park West and meet Heather at Park West. I'm in Jimmy John's and suddenly, all of a sudden, people's phones start going or buzzing or ringing or whatever. And the first person that said anything, like, suddenly everybody stopped. The conversation stopped. Everybody went to whatever device they had. Everybody did. And my phone buzzed. So, like, a couple of minutes afterwards. But everybody stopped what they were doing. They were looking down, and somebody behind the counter, like a kid behind the counter, said, "Oh, my God, Michael Jackson's dead." And then I'm looking from table to table, and it spread all around the room immediately. And that was when I went, wow, this social media thing, you can, like that, everybody in that Jimmy John's, everybody knew that Michael Jackson died because of their phones. And I was, like, struck by that. I was like, wow. And then my phone buzzed because Heather found out. She was at work, and I didn't have a smartphone or any of that crap. So she texted me and said, "Hey, did you know that Michael Jackson died?" And that's how I found out. I was in the Jimmy John's with everybody else who immediately found out at the same time through social media that Michael Jackson died. And that was the first time that I had ever seen, you know, how quickly and impactful social media was when he passed away. We got a break. We'll take a break. 312-981-7200. Where were you during the OJ verdict, during the Bronco chase? Michael Jackson passed away. Where were you when moments in your life? 312-981-7200. Talk and text. News is next. Morning, everybody. How you doing? Welcome back. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. I'm your overnight dude. Weekday mornings, 2 a.m. to 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich in the opening bell at 5, and my buddy Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. You should always tune in for that. It is a Thursday morning. Dan Shugrue has taken the morning off, we don't have DJ Shugrue, so we are not doing Triple Play Thursday. We'll bring that back next week. And Dan will indeed be back tomorrow night. And also off this morning is Vic Vaughn. And Roger Badish is in the newsroom for Vic this morning. And Esmeralda decided she'd come in. So
yeah, it was a last minute.
Yeah, might as well. Okay, we are talking about where were you when moments. when big news events or big stories happened. And this all got kicked off because I've been watching, I watched four of the five parts of this OJ Made in America documentary, which is an extraordinary piece of work. And it got me to thinking about, you know, that was a big, huge moment, the Bronco chase, the verdict. And I wanted to hear from you guys. So where were you when you heard about the verdict and you saw the Bronco chase and other historical things as well? We've got a ton of I got a list here of a ton of big moments in the world and how you experienced them. And we were just talking about how Esmeralda and I experienced the Michael Jackson when you found out Michael Jackson had passed away. We got people on the line. Here's Andrew on WGN. Hi, Andrew.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. I want to talk about the O.J. Simpson verdict.
Okay.
Okay. This was 1995. At the time, I was working in New Jersey at one of the Job Corps locations. I don't know if you're familiar with Job Corps.
Yes.
Okay. I'm saying this because Job Corps is a program for disadvantaged youth. Mm-hmm. And most of the people there, this was the New York area, were African-American or Hispanic. And I'm saying this because one of the stories immediately after the O.J. Simpson trial was the different reactions of different audiences, both Caucasian and African American. Now, at the time, the day before, I wasn't sure whether this was the best thing to show all these kids the verdict, because 3 years earlier was the Rodney King verdict,
right.
And people were expecting definitely a guilty, and it didn't turn out that way. Anyway, they had all the students come in to this great big room, which they normally have for placement testing, and it kind of reminded me of when I was a kid, and they showed the Apollo moon landing.
Right, right.
Like they had, this was before plasma TV or cell phones, so they had one TV and they had a bunch of people surrounded about it. And I was like 70% sure I thought he'd be found guilty, but I wasn't completely sure. And this was just after lunch. It was like a little after 1, I remember. 1 o'clock on Eastern time.
Right.
And, it was exciting because I didn't know what the reaction would be. And when they announced not guilty, it was as if there was like a shout of jubilation.
Yeah.
Like the winning goal was scored at the World Cup.
Right.
In overtime.
Right.
And I was sort of excited. I was surprised and excited at the verdict because this was like a moment. Everyone was very charged up. And I remember when we did return to class, students were saying, oh, aren't you happy? Aren't you happy that this happened? And I was like, okay, if you're happy, I'm happy.
Right.
But we didn't, I remember we didn't get a lot of work done that day.
I can imagine.
Everyone was very euphoric.
Right.
And everyone, we were just talking about the trial, the verdict.
Right.
The rest of class or the rest of that day.
Right.
That
yeah, no, I mean, that's a very interesting place to be when that verdict is announced. And Andrew, thank you for the call. 312-981-7200. I appreciate it. What's amazing is how, and this in the documentary again really covers it. And again, I don't you know what's going to happen on part 5. I'm going to watch when I get home in the morning. But part 4 ends right before the verdict. So that sense of like euphoria on one end and bafflement and shock on the other side. There's footage that I'm sure will be in part 5 of cameras at public places. Watching the cameras focused on people as they watch the verdict. And the majority of reactions were, if it's a room full of people and there are African-Americans and whites in the room, the look of shock and dismay on the white people's faces is registered, and the jubilation and celebration on the side of the African-Americans is registered as well. And that's the way it was, especially in L.A. and most of the country. And it is because of what had happened in the early 90s across the country, especially in L.A. And, you know, Andrew mentions the Rodney King beating and then the trial and the verdict there. That's covered as well in this documentary, because it's important to realize what was happening in L.A. and in this country at the time of that verdict, and what fed into that verdict and what fed into the public's, you know, reaction to O.J. being on trial for murder. It was an extraordinarily strange and interesting time. And again, beautifully captured in this documentary. Here's Sheila on WGN. Hi, Sheila.
Hi. Nick, I was, when John F. Kennedy was shot, I was working as a ticket agent for American Airlines, which was then on North Wabash Avenue, and somebody walked in the door and announced that John F. Kennedy had been shot. And, of course, everybody was shocked.
Yep.
Yeah. And by the way, my son was at your first wedding reception.
What?
Yeah. My son attended your first wedding reception.
Who was your son?
You didn't know him. He was with a girl who had been in the theater with you.
Who, do you remember who the girl was?
He couldn't remember.
He couldn't remember.
No.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, the promiscuity of the Factory Theater, everybody. I don't even remember who was. Well, okay. Did he have a good time?
Oh, yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Very cool.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, Sheila.
Sure thing.
Take care. That's weird. That was weird.
It was very weird.
That was weird. My wedding took place, by the way, about a year after the O.J. verdict. I don't know what that means anything, but all right.
Where were you when Nick D. got married?
Yeah, apparently a lot of people were there at the wedding. I'm glad they had a good time. It was a great. Here's the thing about the marriages I've had. Both weddings were great.
Yeah. The second one was awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you.
The wedding was great. The reception was great. Just the marriages didn't work out. So, you know.
Technicality.
Yeah. All right, 773 area code says, in Wisconsin the night before on a bike tour for the chase, a short drive from supper turned into hours when I got caught up into listening in the car radio and I missed an exit and got halfway to Minneapolis because he was listening to the car chase on the air.
Wow.
773 area code says, I was a freshman at Columbia College during the O.J. verdict on a break between classes in the student lounge on Wabash. Talk about hearing a pin drop. That was from Kelly. And let's see, we got a couple of other ones here. Let's see. Listening from Muncie, Indiana, 630 area code says, at Applebee's in Streamwood, Illinois. What? How can you be in, what are you?
Did they have
this
TVs
person have a teleport?
He's saying he's listening now?
Here's what it says. Listening from Muncie, Indiana, at Applebee's in Streamwood, Illinois. That's what the sentence says. I don't know.
He's got a TARDIS.
Do we know what's going on?
Yeah, my guess would be they're listening from Muncie, Indiana. Currently, they were at Applebee's at Streamwood, Illinois.
Oh, they're from Muncie, Indiana, but they're at an Applebee's in Streamwood, Illinois.
No, they were at an Applebee's in Streamwood, Illinois when.
Oh, they
the chase
happened. I see. All right, okay, because the construction of the sentence is a little. Okay, so. They were at an Applebee's in Streamwood, Illinois, celebrating my daughter. Okay, here's the weird thing. Do you see how the text is written? Because Streamwood, Illinois, then there's like, well, they get the period for because they shorten Illinois to IL. But then celebrating is a capital letter. So to me, the sentence reads, listening from Muncie, Indiana, comma, at Applebee's in Streamwood, Illinois, period. Capital letter, celebrating my daughter's engagement. So, that's why I'm confused. So, they're listening in Muncie, Indiana. Here's the deal. They were at Applebee's in Streamwood, Illinois, celebrating my daughter's engagement with husband number one. Should have known that then the marriage was doomed. Working at Smith Klein Beecham Chemical Laboratories when the verdict came in. Okay, so that's for the verdict. And they rolled a TV into the lunchroom. All right. 773 area code. What about the verdict? Teaching AP English, some seniors ignored the bell and stayed in their lounge to watch. The overly tolerant dean of students let them off with a truancy tap because it was the JFK moment of their generation. Please. 773 area code doesn't believe that it's the JFK moment of their generation. It's a big moment, though. It's a big one. Dan, what about you? Where were you when you heard about Michael Jackson?
I was at work, actually. I worked at Standard Bank in Palos Park, beautiful Palos Park, Illinois.
Oh, yes.
And I'd actually, you know, we weren't supposed to, but, you know, I flipped through some, like, music magazines and stuff during the downtime.
Yeah.
And actually, like, just a couple of days before that, because that was when he was kind of ramping up for his big, supposedly his big comeback tour. So I was kind of reading a little bit about that.
Yeah, that's where that this is the end, or this is the whatever that movie.
Yeah,
came out.
Something like
it
that.
That was all like the rehearsals and everything leading up to the big tour.
Yeah, so that was kind of, for some reason, it was like fresh on my mind because I was just taking in all this like music news, and then I kind of just click over to, you know, CNN website, you know, just trying to pass a little bit of time, and he said, "Oh, Michael Jackson hospitalized." It's like, oh, okay, that's kind of funny. And then he was dead by the time
it's
I got
weird.
Home.
Weird, yeah. All right. Roger, where were you when you heard Michael Jackson passed away?
That was the day after my birthday.
Okay.
June 25th is when it happened. And what was the other death that day?
Farrah.
Yep, Farrah Fawcett.
Yeah.
Which kind of got, like, totally hit.
Oh, yeah, no, Farrah Fawcett was, you know, and this whole year everybody keeps dying on the same day.
Yeah.
And this whole year has been ridiculous in terms of celebrity deaths.
Yep.
Absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, I can't remember because that was the middle of the week.
Yeah, I think it was a Thursday.
Thursday.
Yeah.
If it was June, I wasn't teaching. School was done for the year, or for that year. And I was probably home doing something. I don't think I was here working.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I remember, well, I would have been working the next night. Friday night. Saturday. Yeah,
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I was probably home or running errands or something.
It was a weird one, though, just being in a Jimmy John's, man, and everybody's phone. Like, in 2 seconds, everybody knew that Michael Jackson died. It was just very, very strange. We got some people who are who had texted us about 9/11. We can do that one. 312-981-7200. 312 area code says, I happen to be off work on 9/11 and didn't find out what had occurred until 1:30 in the afternoon when I woke up. I remember 17 flashing on our answering machine. I obviously spent the next few hours watching news coverage. That's Brian. That's very similar to what happened to me. Very, very similar to how I experienced the whole 9/11 thing. 312-981-7200. But we're talking about where were you moments. Where were you when big moments happened? Morning, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. All right, we're talking about where were you when big news stories or big world events happened. How did you find out about them? We started with this, with the O.J. Bronco chase, the O.J. verdict. And this is inspired by the fact that this incredible five-part documentary on ESPN called O.J. Made in America is on. And it got me to thinking about where everybody was during that event and other events as well. And we've talked about Michael Jackson's death and other things. And Esmeralda, what about 9/11? Where were you for 9/11?
I was in my dorm. It was my first year of college and my first day of classes.
Oh.
And I had a 9 a.m. class, I think, or 9:30. And I was awoken by my roommate's mom. And she told us to turn the TV on, and it was the first plane had hit the building. And we were just like, oh, my gosh, that's crazy. So I just get up to get ready, and I'm getting ready. And then the second plane hit. Yeah, and then just everyone went bananas, you know, people walking out into the hallway. People are trying to call their families. The lines are all jammed up. And then, yeah, they put out a thing that said that the classes were canceled.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I just, and like everybody else, stayed inside, watched TV. I remember going to the cafeteria and there was TV set up.
Yeah. So you just spent like everybody else, you spent hours watching TV.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, man. It was so weird. Just such an insane, insane thing. Dan, what about you? What at 9/11?
Yeah, I was in class. I don't remember what class it was, but the teacher, you know, and obviously when stuff happens like that, there's always information that you kind of have to sift through initially that comes out. So he's like, because the teacher turned the radio on. He said, first thing we got into class, he goes, okay, no class today. Something very serious is going on, and we're trying to kind of figure out what it is. So we were just listening to the news, you know, on the radio, and like even they kind of only had a vague picture of what was going on.
Oh, I mean, you know, the information, you know, that was coming in.
Yeah,
was I mean Spike was covering it here on the
Spike
station,
covered it
and
here.
I can't imagine, you know, being here. And they you know, and they said if you want to go home, the management here said, you know, if people don't feel safe, and you want to go home, you know, that makes sense because nobody knew what was happening.
Right. Yeah.
And you know, and this building is a target, would be a target for that for that kind of attack. I mean, it's a Tribune building, and I remember that they closed down like Sears Tower. They closed down. Hancock Building, and people who were working down here didn't know what was happening, freaking out, you know?
Yeah, and that and it was weird because after that, it was like total information blackout in our school. Like, because
really?
They wouldn't let teachers turn on the TV, or it was, you know, so I didn't know anything other than, because this was, I think, just one of the planes that hit at this point. So all I knew
so it
was
still only, and it was just the one plane went into the building, and that was it, I mean, at that point, they didn't know what was going on because, you know, people were saying it was like a small, like a prop plane that went into the building, and nobody knew what was happening. It really wasn't until the second plane hit that people went, okay, this is terrorism. There's something going on here. So, but that's weird. Now, were you in school all day? Did they cancel classes?
No, we had school all day, and I didn't get the big picture of what happened
until you got home from school.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, there were rumors and stuff. You know, you get stuff secondhand
over
the course of the day. But
that's kind of crazy that they – wow. I'm really surprised that they didn't cancel class and go, you know, everybody should go home and watch this. That's weird. Okay. All right. Well, we got a break here for the news, and we'll come back, find out what Roger was how Roger found out about 9/11 or experienced it. I'll tell you my story, too, and we'd love to hear from you. We're doing historical where were you when moments, and we'll get back to it after the news, which is next. Morning, everybody. Welcome back to the show. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower, here until 5 a.m. Dan Chagrew took the morning off. Dan Long filling in for him. Vic Vaughn also took the morning off. Roger Badish in the newsroom. Esmeralda was stuck here. So
they locked the door on me.
They locked the door.
So.
She had to stay. Yeah. So
they tricked me. They're like, no, go get that last thing. And then they both ran away.
Yeah, I understand. That's the only way people can put up with me for 3 hours a night. 312-981-7200 is the phone number where we were talking about. This is what we're talking about. We want to hear from you. Big historical moments, big news stories, life-changing things that happened in the world. Where were you when you experienced them? I mean, I have a whole list here. We're going to get into some 9/11 stories. Let's see. The Hurricane Katrina, John Lennon shot. The space shuttle disaster, and Reagan shot, Princess Diana dying. These are all moments in you know, like the last 20, 30, 40 years that have happened, and we want to hear from you at 312-981-7200 with your stories. Roger, 9/11 for you?
Yeah, so I was teaching at Chicago Vocational, and I always get into work early. So I was driving and listening to WGN, hadn't heard anything. It was about maybe 6:45-ish in the morning.
Yeah.
And it's a long walk from the parking lot to the main office to punch in and then all the way back around to where my classroom was. It, very long time, maybe 15, 20 minutes to walk it. So in that time, the first plane had hit, but I didn't know about it until I was setting up the TV in my classroom. I was teaching radio and TV, and I had a jerry-rig the old paperclip in the back of the TV to get an antenna to work. Mm-hmm. And when the picture came on, that's when I saw it. And so whatever I was planning to teach the kids that day went out the window.
Right.
And we watched it. I had a class starting right at 8 o'clock, a double period class. And we watched everything. We paid attention to it. And I completely changed my lesson plan. And I taught them editing videos, which I hadn't even started on yet, because I made them each produce their own video 9/11. I got maybe 300 photos off of the internet of everything that had happened, and then they put out a tribute CD. A bunch of music artists got together and sang songs, and you know, patriotic type songs. And so I found the CD just a couple of days later, and that's what my students put together.
Mm, wow.
Yeah, it was very emotional, yeah. Very moving, and very educational.
The thing that I remember the most about the morning that happened was, now I had slept through most of it. My girlfriend and I was living with a girl named Helena who ran a children's theater company that's still in existence called Barrel of Monkeys. And they did a show every Monday night, which they still do at the Neo Futurarium, celebrating, and they just celebrated their 15th anniversary not too long ago, called That's Weird Grandma. And every Monday night, Helena would go to the space, the Neo Futurarium on Ann Ashland, and, you know, watch the show and be a part of the show and all that stuff. And then I would have my idiot friends over and we would watch wrestling. This was a Monday night. We would do this every Monday night. She would go off, go to Barrel of Monkeys and be a part of the show. And my idiot friends would come over and we would watch Raw every Monday night. And we would drink a bunch of beer. We'd watch Raw. And then afterwards, she and all of her friends and me and all of my friends would meet at Simon's, which was like 6 blocks from my apartment and right around the corner from the Neo Futurarium. And that was our Monday night thing. We did it every Monday night. And usually it lasted well into the night. We would, you know, have a bunch of beers and hang out till very, very late at night. And that was just a typical Monday night. 9/11 was on Tuesday. And we had our bedroom door closed. We had 2 doors leading into the bedroom in the apartment that I lived in. Both of them were closed. And I started hearing the phone ringing. And this was back, you know, obviously, well, Helena had a cell phone. She was early on that thing. She had a cell phone, but her phone was off. But the phone in the living room was ringing, and it kept ringing and ringing and ringing. And finally, I'm like, what the hell is going on? Why are people calling me? So I get up, and I walk out, and like that listener who sent in a text, there were like 20 messages on my machine. And I was like, what the hell is going on? Something, you know, I immediately think something serious has happened, like to my friends or my family or something. So I start listening to the messages, and the messages began, you know, parents, friends, you know, people that I know. Everybody was like, are you watching this? Like, every message began with, are you watching the TV right now? And so, like, after the third message that started with, can you believe what's on television? Can you believe what's happening in New York right now? That's when I turned on the TV. Now, by the time Helena and I said, Helena, you need to get out here. Something's going on. And she came out of the bedroom. I turned the TV on. By this point, both towers were down. By the time, you know, this is, we'd woke up. I mean, it had to be like 11:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
That point. So the towers were down, but they kept showing everything, you know, over and over and over and over again. And so I was stunned. I had friends in New York who live in New York. I had friends who lived in Lower Manhattan. And so I immediately start freaking out and trying to call. Nobody can get through. And so we ended up, like everybody else, we watched TV for hours and hours and hours, and we couldn't take it anymore. We had to get out, and we went to Simon's, and Simon's was packed because everybody needed to be somewhere. Everybody needed to be with other people. Now, of course, all the TVs, the jukebox was off. All the TVs at Simon were still showing everything that was happening on CNN and everything that was happening in the world and in New York, but people needed to be with one another. And it was one of those moments where Simon's was this home, a second home for everybody. It was like, I can't sit in my house anymore. I can't sit and watch this crap. I need to go out and I need to see people. I need to talk to people and share this experience. And I still couldn't get a hold of a lot of the people that were in New York. But the one thing that I remember the most about it, the weirdest and eeriest thing was not hearing any planes. Not hearing one plane, not one plane flying overhead or making any noise, nothing. It was eerie, and it was just really, really weird. And that was the one thing that, when it was clearly an insane situation, and a situation that obviously no one is ever going to forget. The world changed because of it, and nobody knew what to do. You know, like I had to work on the 13th. I had to come in and work on the 13th. So it was 2 days afterwards I came in to work, and I didn't know what to do. I came on the air. My show is supposed to be lighthearted and silly and funny, and I'm thinking to myself, what's the point of my show? What the hell is the point? Why am I even going to bother to do this stupid, insignificant radio show? And it was the hardest show I've ever had to do. So, you know, people didn't know, especially if you're in the entertainment business, nobody knew what to do. If was comedy dead? Was irony dead? Nobody knew what was happening in the world at that time. It was unbelievable. But you know, like, that's how I experienced it. But the one strongest memory I have is the complete silence outside and no planes in the air. It was the weirdest thing ever.
I will tell you, as the day went on in our school, I don't know if you know or have ever driven past on the tollway, Chicago Vocational Career Academy.
I know exactly where it is. Yes.
It's a huge building. Huge. Every kid in the school was wanting to leave the school. They were afraid the school was going to get bombed because it was so big.
Well, everybody did. Everybody wanted to leave. I mean, nobody knew. It was insane. Yeah. Absolutely insane. Here's David on WGN. Hey, David.
Hi.
Hi.
I was working for Nextel call center at the time. And what we had was some Nextel stores in the area. We would tell the first responders where to get new batteries and new phones because their phones would be damaged by the fire hoses and that they were using to put out the fire. And since people couldn't get calls out from the buildings, they would use their landlines and they would call in a call center and say, "Hey, I can't talk to you, so-and-so. Will you tell so-and-so I'm okay?"
So you were like you were like a go-between at the call center. You were a go-between.
Right.
Yeah.
And so what we would do is tell the people that we were talking to on the phone saying, get off the phone, go downstairs as fast as you can.
Right.
Because we heard after the first plane hit the first tower, the first responder says, "We can't get an aircraft up in the air to take them off the roof."
Right, of course. Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, David, I gotta hit the break here, but thanks for the call. Being a first responder in that situation is unbelievable, especially if you can't get a hold of anybody. So as a go-between, the call center. The other thing is I had a friend whose second day on the job, she was my stage manager for a play that I had directed earlier in 2001. Her name was Missy. It was her second day on the job on the 82nd floor of the second tower. It was her second day on the job. She was on the 82nd floor. She's fine. She's alive. But I'll tell the story afterwards. I had her on my show that weekend to tell her story. It was pretty unbelievable. Her second day. She had just moved to New York. She just got the job. Very excited on that Monday. Oh, my God, this is going to be... And she worked like in an insurance company. It was a very small office, and it was on the 82nd floor. I believe it was in the... It was the second tower that got hit. Because... And I can't remember which one was the first one. North or South got hit first? Does anybody remember?
Oh, I couldn't tell you.
Well, she was in the tower that eventually got hit the second time. And I can't remember North or South got hit first. Somebody would know. I just don't remember. But anyway, I'll tell you her story. It was really absolutely unbelievable. David, thanks for the call. 312-981-7200. Where were you when? Moments. 312-981-7200. Morning, everybody. Welcome back to the show. Nick DiGilio here. I'm your overnight dude on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower here till 5. Hey, tomorrow is Fly Jams Friday. We've got all of our regular features for Friday as well, including Straight Out of Context. That's when you listen to this radio station 24/7. And whenever anybody at any time says something that you can pull out of context and it sounds dirty and it makes you giggle, jot down the day, the time, who said it, and send it to nickdshow@gmail.com, and we'll play all the goofy Straight Out of Context back tomorrow. Nick D Show Spies, that's when you listen 24/7 to this radio station. Whenever I am mentioned or the show is mentioned in any capacity, you become a spy. Jot down the day, the time, who said it again, and send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. We'll play the spies back. And also we have You Big Dummy, which is when we take all the news stories that are true and that just are news stories about dumb people doing dumb stuff, usually get them arrested or something stupid, If you want to read one of those stories on the air, find a link to a funny dummy story and say, hey, Dan, I'd like to read this on the air, and then send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. And Dan will help you out. We'll record it. You will not only be a part of the show reading the dummy story, but you also get yourself a Lumel Nauties gift certificate. So it's a win-win-win situation. So always remember nickdshow@gmail.com for Straight Out of Context, Nick D Show Spies, and if you would like to read a dummy story. That's coming up tomorrow on Friday's show. All right, Nick DiGilio here on 720. We are talking about where were you when moments, big historical things that had happened. And here is Sue on WGN. Hi, Sue.
Hello. Good morning, everyone. And I certainly could have commented on many of the things that you have already mentioned, but I wanted to throw in here mention about Christopher Reeves. Mm-hmm. My friend and I were in New Orleans in 2004, and my sister actually is also a quadriplegic. And at any rate, we were in New Orleans, and, you know, wow, Christopher Reeves and that horrible accident, and you know, and then that's when he had passed away, and that was very poignant.
Yeah, so you were on vacation in New Orleans when you found out.
Right, you know, we were just getting ready to go out and do stuff and had the radio on, and we were like, you know, wow, you know, you, of course, it, you know, was in the movies, but, you know, that touches you.
Yeah, of course, absolutely. All right, Sue, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
312-981-7200 is the phone number. Here's Patrick on WGN. Hey, Patrick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, two things happened on 9/11 for me, or in that area. So, I do heating and air conditioning, and I was working in a new job, new company, maybe 5 months, 4 months, whatever, into it. And I had this young guy, the guy seriously was probably 10 years younger than me, but he was their lead installer. So we were doing a job, get there at the customer's house at like 8 o'clock. And what, it happened at 9, if I'm not mistaken? It was weird. It was like 9-11 on 9-11, you know. It was really close to those times and the dates. So the customer says, oh, my God, to me and this dude I'm working with, you know, somebody just attacked the World Trade Center, and she's got the TV on, and I'm doing the condenser, which is just happens to be right outside the window of the TV, and she's got the TV on, obviously. I'm not working at all. I'm sitting there watching the TV through the window. The guy comes up and tells me, hey, come on, dude, you know, we got a job to do. I'm, like, watching, and as he's telling me this, I'm like, did you just see that? He's like, what? I'm like, the second plane just hit the second building. He said, seriously, man, come on, we got a job to do. I'm like, dude, you don't understand what's going on here. And he didn't at all. He was like, you know what, whatever. If we get in trouble for this, you know, what,
yeah,
you know. And so, sure, it's poop. I got fired for it a couple of days later. The guy didn't say that. That's why he fired me. But he was like, you know, just things aren't working out. The boss, you know, and the boss was, the boss's son was friends with this guy. So the guy apparently told him, you know, I wasn't working to what I should have been doing. Mm. So that blew me away. So that my father-in-law was marrying his third wife in Hawaii. And we were one of the first flights to be let out from Chicago when they, like, I think it was 9/17.
Yeah.
That they started allowing flights. So, again, yeah, that's great. You know, you're not paranoid. I was with my wife and my firstborn at the time, so we're freaking out. And but like you said, at the time, I was, like I am now, a night owl. I can't sleep, whatever, so I'm out always watching the sky. And like you said, it was crazy how dead silent the skies are, because I live in the northwest suburbs. Planes are always coming in and out of, you know, over here,
right
over my, and like you said, nothing.
Yep.
Till 9/17 or whatever the day was, there was nothing.
Right.
And the weirdest thing is, I don't know if you ever paid attention to when Obama comes into town, they cut off all flights. Nothing comes in and out for a couple hours. And at night, if you watch the sky and it's clear sky, they actually put a contrail up I swear to God, I didn't have a camera at the time. They made a circle around the city of a contrail and had F-18s or whatever they are just flying around. So you couldn't see any planes. All you saw was red dots flying around the sky. Mm-hmm. Anytime Obama comes in, I know it has nothing to do with 9/11, but it's weird.
Right. Okay. All right, Patrick.
You know, at the same time, not see any flights flying come when Obama's in town, boom, the airport shuts down.
Okay.
You know.
All right, Patrick.
But
thanks,
9/11
man.
Was, hey. I love your show, man.
Thanks, buddy. I appreciate it. Take care.
I think you're a rock star of the radio.
Oh, dude. Thanks, man. Have a good day.
See you.
All right.
Take care, buddy.
See ya. Yeah. Well, that's standard when the president comes to town. It's the president of the United States. So let me quickly tell you the story about Missy. Missy she had just gotten this job, and she was in the second tower and on the 82nd floor. And she said that she was there, you know, it was just started, and it was a small office, I believe, of maybe 10 or 12 employees, and not all of them had showed up yet. So there were about six people in the office. Suddenly, the first plane hits the tower across from them. She said the explosion was unbelievable, and the building didn't shake. It completely swayed, like it went like all the way over to the left side, then all the way over to the right side. Things were rolling off the desk and falling. And she looked out the window and just saw flames and paper and fire. And immediately fire alarms and stuff go off in the building that she's in. And but I don't know if you guys remember this. The recording, the over the loudspeaker inside the Trade Center said, "Stay in your office. Don't go anywhere. Stay in your office." That was like the safety thing, was to stay in your office. The boss in this office building said, in this office said, "Screw that. We're out of here. We are out of here. Get your stuff. Get out of here right now." So they thought there was like a gas explosion in the building across. They didn't know a plane had hit it. They just knew there was a big explosion, shook the crap out of the building they were in. The boss made the decision. He's getting his employees out of here. So they go out. They walk past the elevator. They go up to the elevator. They walk past the elevator. They get to the elevator, and they decide they're not going to take the elevator. So so she ends up like in the stair. They end up in the stairway, and they were on the 82nd floor, and they ended up walking down 82 flights. During that time, the plane hit their building. So while she was in the I can't remember what level she was on when the plane hit the building. She said it was just the entire building like shook. Everything was insane. The lights went out in the stairwell, and then they ended up like all together. Everybody was counting the steps and counting the floors that they were on together. They were all holding each other. Then she said as they were going down, the firemen were going upstairs. So as they're going down, they're passing these first responders, these firemen going up into it. She made it out of the building, walked out, made it all the way down. I think she said it took 45 minutes or something like that to get out. She turned around and looked up once, just looked up once, and she said it looked like Die Hard. It looked like a Michael Bay movie. And she walked to Long Island. She just did not look back, and she walked to Long Island. She made it out of Manhattan before either of the towers fell. So it was insane. Insane story. All right, anyway, we got to take a break coming up here. We got the news. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Everybody hang on. I know a lot of people are hanging on. We got some texts coming in. 312-981-7200. And we can talk about some other stuff too. Where were you when moments, historical moments that we would love to hear from you at 312-981-7200. So keep them coming. Morning, everybody. Hi, Nick DiGilio here. Welcome back to the show. I'm your overnight dude, 2 to 5 a.m. every weekday morning. Here till 5 o'clock. Coming up at 5 o'clock, it's Steve Grzanich in the opening bell. And then after 6, it's my main man, Steve Cochran, for your morning drive. Our phone number is 312-981-7200. If you would like to join us, we're talking about where were you when. 312-981-7200 And we were talking about where you were for 9/11 and some of the other events in life. This conversation started because I am four parts into the five-part ESPN 30 for 30 documentary called O.J. Made in America. And it is, without question, one of the greatest and most astonishing pieces of documentary filmmaking I have ever seen in my life. It is a monumental achievement for television. And I highly, highly recommend everybody watch it. You can see it on ESPN. They're airing all the parts leading up to Saturday. And then you can also, if you have Xfinity On Demand, I don't know about some of the other providers, you know, DirecTV or Dish or anything, but on Xfinity, which I have, it's on demand. All five parts are available, commercial-free, uncensored. And you can watch them that way, which is how I recommend you watch them. I watched all four parts when I get home in the morning after I watch Johnny Carson, of course. I will watch the fifth part of this amazing documentary called O.J. Made in America. And it's really incredible that the best 18 hours of television that I've seen in 2016 are all around the O.J. Simpson case. Because the FX series, The People versus O.J. Simpson, was one of the best things I've ever seen on television and one of the most compelling and entertaining things that was on television this entire year. The FX series with, you know, John Travolta and Sarah Paulson and Cuba Gooding Jr., Schwimmer, and on. That was unbelievable. And then this documentary, this eight-hour documentary, just, you know, it tops it. So it's kind of amazing. If you told me at the beginning of the year that the best, by far, the most extraordinary 18 hours of television that you're going to see in 2016 all involved the O.J. Simpson trial and the O.J. Simpson case, I would have said you're crazy. But it's the truth. It's the truth. First, the extraordinary miniseries that FX put out, which was amazing, and now this incredible documentary. So that got me to thinking, hey, where were you during the O.J. trial, during the Bronco chase, during the verdict and all that stuff, and where were you during other things? So 312-981-7200. Now, Esmeralda, you're too young because you weren't even born yet. And Dan, you weren't even born yet the night that John Lennon was killed. I found out, like I think a lot of people found out. I was 15. I was 15 years old. I found out, like, I think a majority of the people found out. I found out from Howard Cosell on Monday Night Football. That's how I found out. We were watching Monday Night Football, and Howard Cosell comes on and gives the news that John Lennon had been shot and killed. And I was beside myself. I was 15 years old, and only a few years earlier, I started really, really, really getting into the Beatles. It was a massive, massive thing. It had a huge impact on me, like so many other people. But I think a lot of people that night found out about Lennon's death through Monday Night Football. And the next morning at school, I've told this story on the air before. The next morning at school, Luther North is where I went to school. They had morning announcements. And, you know, there was a real funk in the air at school that day because, you know, I was 15. I was, at that point, I was a sophomore in high school. And it, you know, it didn't have a huge effect. I don't think it had a huge effect on the younger kids as much as it did, like, the upperclassmen, especially seniors and things like that, you know, who were like 17, 18 years old at that point. So, but there was a real, like, funk in the air, and people were sad about it. There were a lot of kids who were. Some kids didn't care. Some kids weren't into the Beatles. You know, they didn't care. Some people really didn't know the historical and cultural significance and the artistic contributions that John Lennon is responsible for. And it's massive. It's just immeasurable, quite frankly. So we were all very upset. A lot of us were very upset. And there was a teacher, I won't say his name. He taught a religion class, and he was a very, very conservative, very, very, very religious guy. But I stress very conservative. And also, he was a guy who, during, you know, like, if you had religion classes with him, he was convinced that we were living in 1980, 1981, we were living in end times. Like, he always was talking about that it's Armageddon, and he was always talking. He's freaking out 13, 14, 15-year-old kids, you know, kids who are going to Luther North because they have faith, or in my case, going because my parents didn't want me to go to Lane because I was hanging out with potheads who went to Lane, and they didn't want me going there. But the point is, I think this guy, looking back on it, we used to make fun of the guy, you know, but looking back on it, insanely irresponsible guy, insanely irresponsible teacher. He gets on the morning announcements the day after, the morning after John Lennon is killed. He's doing like the morning announcements, and then they would do a morning prayer. Okay, so they would do a prayer over the PA system, and everybody would, you know, bow their heads, and you would pray. So before the morning prayer, he says over the announcer, over the PA, you should not pray for John Lennon. John Lennon was a sinner, and he's in hell now. This guy said this over the PA system. I was like, what the hell? And so I got a background story on it, because when I went back to speak at my school in 2007, they wanted me to come back and be alumnus of the year, considering, you know, I thought that was amazing, considering I had a 2.2 grade point average when I graduated. But they wanted me back. This is what happens when you get a radio show. They're like, yeah, you can come back and talk to the kids, despite the fact that you graduated with a 2.2 and you led the school in detentions. But come on back and talk to the kids. You're a great inspiration. It was an honor, and it was awesome. And I went back, and the principal at that time, or the principal when I went back in 2007 who invited me, was a science teacher and a history teacher back in the 80s when I went there. So at that point in 2007, he had gone up, and he was now the principal. He's the one who invited me back. He told me the behind-the-scenes story of that, because I mentioned it to him. I said, well, here, you know, and I mentioned the teacher's name. I said, do you remember when Mr. Blah, Blah, Blah said that we shouldn't pray for a John Lennon because he was a sinner and he's in hell now? And the principal at the time said to me, yes, I remember that, because I ran out of my classroom, ran down the hallway into the room where they did the announcements, and told him to turn the mic off, and he did. He screamed at this guy. But I could not believe that this guy said that. You know, John Lennon meant a lot to a lot of people. And in that school, and there were teachers who were just, including the one that ran down the hallway. Like, you can't say that about John Lennon. You know, there were teachers in that school who, in 1980, were probably in their 30s, late 20s. And people in their 30s and their late 20s, in 1980, when John Lennon is shot, that is a devastating, devastating thing. Because the Beatles and John Lennon helped them through their adolescence, helped them through so much stuff, probably helped form their politics and their opinions on things. And to say that to a class, to a school full of kids, unforgivable. So, anyway, well, we got a break here, and we'll come back and talk a little bit more. Everybody hang on, 312-981-7200. It's just, then when I got the behind-the-scenes story, though, you know, I go back in 2007, and to have the principal go, of course I remember, because I ran down the hallway and almost killed the guy. It's like, wow, now I feel like an insider. You know what else is really funny? When I went back to speak that night, I would go up and I would see teachers that I used to have. Some of them were, you know, still there teaching. Some had moved up, like the guy to the principal. There was another guy who used to be a teacher who was now the dean. And I would go up and I'd go, oh, Mr. Weeman. And I would shake his hand. He'd go, call me Tom. I'm like, I can't call you Tom. He's like, you're like 45 now. You can call, you know, I was 42 when I went back. He's like, you're 42 years old. You can call me Tom. I'm like, I'm not calling you Tom, Mr. Weeman. Sorry. And I wasn't able to do it. It was Mr. Daly. It was Mr. Weeman. It was, you know, I couldn't do it. It's just weird. And I know that I was like 42 years old. I'm an adult. We're like, you know, we're colleagues now, kind of. But I was like, there's no way I'm calling you by your first name. Are you kidding me? All right, we got a break here. We'll come back. Weather, traffic, we'll get to some of your phone calls and more. Where were you when? Morning, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Hi. Thursday morning. And it's Thursday. That's right. No triple play Thursday today. Dan Shagrew took the morning off, but he'll be back tomorrow as DJ Shagrew. We're talking about where were you when? Roger, you probably have a story about the John Lennon thing.
Yeah, I think we've talked about this before, years past, especially I think when you actually went back for your speaking engagement.
Right.
But you heard it on Monday Night Football. I was already asleep because I had to get up early in the morning. I was working over at Q101. I was doing the morning news, so I had to get up early. Well, the phone rang. I'd say maybe 12:30, 1 o'clock, and someone said, get up, get dressed, get on the L, and interview people. So that's where I spent my morning after the announcement, interviewing people on the L about their reaction to John Lennon dying, and I'd say 99% of them had no clue that it had happened.
Yeah.
So, you know, I didn't have a lot of tape to bring in when I came in, but that's how I covered it.
Yeah.
And it was an unusual day.
Oh yeah. Yep. It was crazy. Yeah. We got the lines are jammed up. Let's get to the phones. Here's Dorothy on WGN. Hi, Dorothy.
Hi, Dick. My husband and I were setting out on a cruise from New York City on 9/10. So our ship was on the Hudson River. And I can remember sailing down the Hudson River at 10, 11 o'clock at night as we were leaving and seeing the towers and the beautiful sights of New York. And when we got up in Rhode Island the next day and we were getting ready to go on shore for a trip, they started bringing the news in about what had happened. I mean, everybody naturally was awestruck there. Mm-hmm. And you know, first of one plane, then the second one, and lots of people got off that ship and wanted to go home. Of course, you couldn't get home. I mean,
right? You couldn't fly, right?
You could rent a car.
Yeah,
but that was the only way you were getting home. But I could remember that, and then you know, a couple of days later, they had a very beautiful memorial service on board the ship. And by the time we got to Montreal, our planes were flying again. But, I mean, we were the only thing we could get was the information that the ship, you know, they that you get on your ship information.
Right.
And it was a very, very emotional experience. And I said, there you were. You couldn't go anywhere.
Right. Yeah, you were stuck. You were stuck.
Yeah, you had to keep living. But I have to toss in another little aside, which is not a memorable event for other people. We're driving home from a Cubs game and listening to WGN News when they announced that a small plane had gone down here in Aurora, and it was my brother-in-law that was on board that was piloting the plane. I mean, you know, kind of come as a shock. They announce his name on the radio. I said, things happen like that. You remember them.
Yeah, you remember them. That's a hell of a way to find out, I'll tell you. Dorothy, thanks for the call. 312-981-7200. Here's Eric on WGN. Hey, Eric.
Yes, I'll be brief. Don't worry. This is the first time I ever told this to the media of any sort. On May 25th of 1979, I was on my way to work on the Northwest Tollway, and I was about one block north of the westbound runway, and I was riding alongside the plane that American Airlines with 273 people that went down.
Yeah.
But what struck me was that I was going at the same. I was going 70 miles an hour, and I was keeping up with the plane. I thought, what the hell? That thing should be going faster if it's taking off. And sure enough, it just barely got up a little higher, tipped a little bit left, and went down in a fiery explosion. And the only reason I didn't pull over on the side of the tollway was I thought right away, nobody could have possibly survived that thing. And it happened at 3 in the afternoon, and I went to work, and I was shaking at work until 6:30 at night. I thought, I'm still shaking after seeing that.
Yeah.
And the last thing is, the song on the radio I'll never forget was Anita Ward's Ring My Bell at the same time.
Jeez.
Yeah, so every time I hear that song, I always think Oh, I saw that plane go down, 273 people.
Boy, what a terrible memory to have attached to such a great song. And I'm sorry, Eric, we've played that song many times on Fly Jams Friday. I don't mean to traumatize you on Fly Jams Friday, Eric. Wow.
Yeah, well.
Well, thanks for the call.
Yes, sir.
Okay, that's incredible. I just feel bad for him now, man. You know, Ring My Bell is such a lovely song and a happy song.
Yeah.
Terrible. 1963, 630 area code says, I was in third grade when they told us that John Kennedy was dead, and my teacher disappeared into his closet, left the door open for me to see him take a drink of booze from a bottle.
I remember that.
A lot of people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We were in the library. Our class had gone to the library at Oakton Grade School in Evanston.
Mm.
And we were all facing the librarian, and they came on the intercom.
Yeah.
And turned the radio on for everyone to listen. And just total shock.
Yeah.
Nobody was moving.
Yeah, I can't even imagine that. And then,
days of coverage.
Well, and not only that, and then you get, like, on live television, Oswald gets shot.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it's like, what the hell is going on?
Yeah. I was glued to the TV. I mean, my resolve to get into the news business was firmed by that.
Yeah.
And it very.
What was it? Was it Dennis? No, it wasn't Dennis Leary. I can't remember who it was. It was like, after Kennedy was killed, then on live TV, they killed Oswald. Now I watch TV because I'm too scared to turn the damn thing off.
Because you never know when something else.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good morning, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower. Here till 5, Steve Grzanich at 5 with the opening bell, and my buddy, the greatest, my main man, Steve Cochran, at 6. We're talking about where were you when moments. Esmeralda, do you remember the San Francisco earthquake of 1989?
No.
You don't remember? You were how old then?
I was six.
Six. Okay. It happened during the World Series. And the Giants, in fact, had a home game that night. It was a mat. What was the, do we know what it was? It was a huge.
It's like, oh, what, like the, ups, what upper, the magnitude
like,
was?
Like 6.9 or something.
Yeah. It might have been even higher than that.
It might have been like 7.1 or something.
Yeah, let me look it up for you. But I was just watching the video on that about 2 weeks ago.
But that was like a lot of people remember where they were when that happened.
Yeah.
It was a massive earthquake, massive.
Right. Was somebody at bat and then they thought, I should have the stadium.
Yeah, a guy just hit a home run and the whole building almost collapsed. I have a very weird memory attached to that one. Roger, do you remember where you were for the 89 earthquake?
I was not watching the World Series. I know that. So I found out about it shortly after it happened. I can't. 89?
Yeah.
89. I was working for, I think, Gloria Jean's Coffee at the time.
Okay.
So it may have been on the radio, or I may have caught it when I drove home and heard about it.
I was, it's interesting, and I was not really following. If you remember 89, the Cubs made it to the playoffs. That was the Boys of Zimmer summer. And it was the damn Giants who knocked him out, of the playoffs. So I was keeping track of the playoffs because I wanted San Francisco to lose. I didn't want there to be a horrible earthquake,
right?
You know, but I was not rooting for San Francisco.
Did you think, oh no?
I did it. I'm responsible. I was rooting so hard against the Giants.
And you were right, by the way, 6.9.
Yeah, it was huge. Yeah. I just remember it was huge. But I was not watching the game. I was at a screening of a movie. And this was October of 89 when it happened. And at that time was when I was hanging out a lot with John Cusack. Remember, I've told you that I used to hang out.
Yeah.
I was hanging out with him and Piven a lot at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And we were drinking a lot at O'Rourke's, at the original O'Rourke's, which was on North Avenue in Orleans on the corner. It's a flat top grill now. But it used to be O'Rourke's, which was the best bar, I think, in the history of this city. It moved to Halsted on Halsted, right across the street from the Steppenwolf, and it was there for a while, but then it closed down permanently. But it was Roger Ebert's favorite bar. He had his stool there, and all that. You know, that was when he was a drinking man too, because he eventually had to give it up. But anyway, we used to meet there a lot and have drinks. And the thing about O'Rourke's was there was never a TV in there. It never had a TV on, never had a TV on. They had a jukebox with 45s of jazz on it. That's it. You would go in. It was a dark, you know, very wood-like bar. It was a beautiful, beautiful bar. Beautiful bar. The alcoholic in me right now is like, oh, I miss it. But it's such an amazing bar with a lot of history. But they never watched TV. So I remember I went to go see the movie. I went to a screening, and we were going to meet up. I talked to Piven earlier, and I'm like, I'm going to see a movie. You guys want to meet, and we'll have some drinks. And I was going to meet the guys. They had a rehearsal for a play, and they were rehearsing just down the street. And then, you know, we were all going to meet up and have some drinks at O'Rourke's. So I'll never forget it. I went to go see the movie Gross Anatomy. Does anybody remember?
Sounds familiar.
Nobody. I bet if I were to... if I were to describe this movie, I don't think anybody would remember it.
That title sounds familiar.
It's not Grey's Anatomy.
Right.
Okay.
Right, you know.
Gross Anatomy. And it was a movie about a bunch of med students going through gross anatomy, which is human dissection.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it was Christine Lottie was in it, Matthew Modine was in it, Daphne Zuniga, who, by the way, co-starred with Cusack in The Sure Thing. And I went to go see it, and it was an uneventful movie, you know, and it wasn't very good. And I was, so afterwards, I stop at the gas station right near, it's not there anymore, but there was a gas station right, you know what North and Clybourne where the L stop is?
Yeah.
There used to be a gas station right there.
Okay.
So I stopped there to get gas, and I pull up. And I walk up, you know, and I go up to the guy in the booth and go, you know, I'll take $10 on number 3 or whatever. So I walk up, and the guy's looking at a little TV, and he's, like, watching the little TV. And I'm standing there for, like, a minute, and I'm like, dude. And I start banging on the window, and I'm like, come on, man, $10 on number 3. He's like, hey, man, there was an earthquake.
Oh, no.
And I'm like, I'm sorry, I didn't know that, but I do need to get some gas. Yeah, man, it was a big earthquake, too. So at this point, this guy's berating me because I'm trying to get some gas, and he's screaming at me because of my insensitivity over the fact that there was an earthquake. Didn't say where, didn't say how big it was. He said it was a big one. And I'm like, okay, I'm really sorry. He made me feel guilty just to get gas. I'm trying to get gas. So I didn't want to ask him any questions. I didn't want to go, where? Oh, my God, you know? So I'm looking at the TV, and then I can see that it's in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't, you know, because I saw it as he was ringing me up and getting the thing ready. So I see it was in San Francisco, and I wasn't going to say, hey, what happened? What happened at Candlestick Stadium? Did the place fall apart? What's going on? So I didn't ask this guy. I didn't want to ask this guy anything for fear of him punching me through the window in the face. So I'm like, all right. Ugh. So I get in the car. I turn on GN. Of course.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm listening to GN, and they're covering it and everything. And I was like, wow, this is crazy. And then it was a very short drive to O'Rourke's. You know, I was at North and Clybourne. It's at North and Orleans.
Yeah.
So it was literally a 3-minute drive. So I jump in the car, I get there, and I'm listening to a little of it, and I'm like, wow. So I'm staying in the car for a few minutes because I wanted to get more information. And so I'm sitting there, and I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to go in, and maybe people know. I walk in. I go into O'Rourke's. First time ever, there's a TV on in O'Rourke's. And I was like, whoa, this has got to be big.
So someone dragged a TV?
No, they had a TV behind, but they never had it on.
Oh, okay.
It's like the Green Mill. They never had the TV on in the Green Mill.
Okay.
But there was a TV, and it was like a small, it wasn't like a, you know, they never watched sporting events or anything at O'Rourke's. You didn't go to O'Rourke's, you know, to watch the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
You know, it was a place where you drank and you listened to jazz. And so, but they had a little TV on, and it was like, it had bad reception. You know what I mean? It was like a coat hanger on top of it. It was one of those deals. But everybody was like, you know, a lot of people were watching it. And that's when I found out exactly what happened, how they stopped the game and all that. But that's like one of my favorite memories. I will always associate, the movie Gross Anatomy, this little movie that, no, and I'm sure like right now, Everybody who's hearing this right now has absolutely no idea what the movie Gross Anatomy is, even after I describe it with its stars Matthew Modine and Christine Lottie. But that's the movie I always associate the big San Francisco 89 earthquake with. That and the guy screaming at me at the gas station. Hey, man, there was an earthquake. I'm like, okay.
I'm just like, and it was a big one.
And it was a big one. I'm like, all right, I didn't do it. I didn't cause it, man. I'm just trying to get some gas. That's all. He was so mad at me because I was, because see, I was standing at the window. I was being patient. The guy wouldn't even, he didn't even, you know how you have peripheral vision, Esmeralda?
Right.
When you see, you can see somebody. If you're working in a little window, you can see your peripheral vision. You know when someone's standing there. And I stood there for a long time. And I'm like, that's when I went, boop, 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 boop. I knocked on the window. Hey! I'm like,
there's earthquakes going on, and you want gas. Yeah,
there's a lot more important things going on than gas for your escort.
You drove an escort.
Yeah, I drove an escort. And it's now part of the history of the Victory Auto Wreckers, because that's where it ended up. I'm not kidding. Ended up in Victory Auto Wreckers. So, all right. Well, we'll get a few more stories in. Everybody hang on. We'll get a few more stories in for Where Were You When. But yeah, just that guy. I wonder where that guy is now, Mr. Sensitivity about earthquakes.
I would say that he's, maybe now, he studies earthquakes.
Yeah. He's in a seismic center right now.
He's an earthquake man.
They just had a huge one last week in California.
And he, you know what he does? He just stands around and goes, hey!
He screams at people, hey! You know there was an earthquake, and it was a big one. Okay, man. Chill.
That's how they determine it now.
They call him.
Yeah.
Was it a big one? It was a big one. Thank you very much. Let's go to the news outlets. Captain Gasman says that it was an earthquake and it was a big one. That's all we know. That's enough. If Captain Gasman says that, we know it's a big deal and we should not be concerned about anything else, especially filling up your tank with gas. Don't worry about that right now. Gross Anatomy. I would have completely forgotten that movie, like have no memory of it whatsoever, if it weren't for the San Francisco earthquake. It's the only reason I remember that movie. It's a completely, like when it was over, I forgot about it.
Oh, that poor little movie.
Yeah, I know. And I can't remember. I remember just thinking, eh, you know, not liking it, not hating it, whatever. But a movie that would have no spot in my brain at all, like no memory in my brain at all, were it not for the earthquake and Captain Gas Man screaming at me. That's it. Yeah. Morning, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Yeah. You know, there was an earthquake, and it was a big one. Oh, man. All right. Let's see. Real quickly, 630 area code said in early December 1980, I had just walked back to my apartment on 23 West 72nd Street in New York when a roommate and I heard five loud, quick shots. Oh, man. Coming from the direction of Central Park. Minutes later, another roommate returned with the news that John Lennon had been shot, and it was really surreal living on that block that week. Wow. Hi, Nick. I started dating my husband in July of 1980. He was a huge Beatle fan, and he shared his birthday with John Lennon. He had dropped me off and headed home. I turned on the TV just as Howard Cosell was announcing that Lennon had been shot. I called him when I thought he'd be home to break the news to him, and it was a very emotional experience. That's Fran, who, by the way, today is my birthday. Oh, happy birthday, Fran.
Happy birthday.
Oh, okay. Let's see. Here is Carl on WGN. Hey, Carl.
Hey, how you doing?
All right.
Real quick story. I'm 17 years old. I'm riding shotgun in a delivery truck. And the driver of the truck, all he listened to was FM. And they break in, and all they said was, the king is dead. And all I could think of, I turned to him and I went, I wonder which country. and he just shrugged his shoulders.
Oh,
and then
gosh,
they went back to music.
That's it. So they just said
that day I found out it was Elvis.
Yeah, that's funny.
Unbelievable.
The king is dead. I wonder which country. America, baby.
Oh my That's good. Wow.
That's good. Okay. Thank you, Carl.
Okay. No
problem. Take care, man. I was 12 when Elvis died. And my dad came home from work and told me and my mom broke down.
Oh.
My mom just huge. My mom's a huge Elvis fan. Mm. And so as a little kid, I would like rebel. It's just stupid. I don't like Elvis. You know, secretly, I thought he was awesome. And right. And of course, you know, as years went by, I realized that Elvis is the king and always will be the king and always was the king. But yeah, I remember my mom broke down when my dad told me. And I can have another specific memory of, the, of that attached to a movie. I remember I saw Suspiria. You know, the horror movie Suspiria?
Yeah, yeah.
Have you watched it yet?
No, I'm not watching that.
It's terrifying.
Yeah, no.
I remember I saw it the weekend that Elvis died. Because I just remember it was like in I just remember that Elvis had died. And then like I think my dad might have been a Friday when he died. And we saw that movie on a Sunday, on the Sunday after. I just remember this. It was the same weekend that Elvis died.
Yeah.
So not only is that movie like one of the most terrifying films I've ever seen, surrealistic and terrifying and awesome and Italian, but it also like reminds me of Elvis' death. So,
cool.
Yeah. Add another layer of weirdness to an already insane movie. Let's see. Dave is on WGN. Hi, Dave.
Greetings and salutations.
Hi.
I was don't have an exciting story. I was in front of the telly watching both shuttle disasters coverage because I'm a bit of a manned spaceflight enthusiast.
Right.
And during, of course, the Challenger disaster, it was like, you know, you see when the shuttle disintegrated and you see the fireball.
Right.
It was like, it's too early for SRB SEP. You know,
and they showed it. They showed it 8 million times.
And like I say, I still haven't. I was running tape. I record all the shuttle coverage. You know what I would, and I still haven't looked at the tapes from that. You know, but
I was working at Jewel at the time. I was at Jewel. It was I know it was around 9 in the morning when it happened. 9:30 in the morning, because my shift started at 9, and we were told about it. There was a TV down in the break room at Jewel, and we were told about it. The manager came up and said the Challenger just exploded. We were like, what? So yeah. It's like, everybody take a quick break. So we ran downstairs to the break room and we watched it.
Yeah. Did it even seem real?
No,
just
it didn't.
Just because it's
it was
so far away.
Yeah.
It took time to process. And then with
absolutely.
The Columbia disaster,
yeah.
All the networks were still running. They were still having cameras and waiting for the shuttle to land at its scheduled time. It was only I was flipping around, and it was only on MSNBC where they announced that they were Jay Barbary was announced mentioning that they had lost contact with the shuttle. But other, you know, like I say, the other networks were still waiting. You know, the coming in for the
right,
landing.
Right. Right.
So it was like, you know, it took time to process this, that there was a problem on both the situations.
I remember both of them very vividly. Okay, Dave, thanks.
Thank you.
All right, and here's Tom on WGN. Hey, Tom.
Yeah, hi, Nick. How you doing?
All right.
Back in 63, and I was a pretty good actor back then, so I faked sick. And I remember watching Bozo Circus, eating my grilled cheese and drinking my tomato soup, and my mom yells, oh, my God. And it's right in there picking the kids for the grand prize game. She runs in. She turns on Channel 2 because that's where Cronkite was, and, you know, he was God back then.
Yep.
And I remember him, the famous scene where he takes his glasses off and he and says, "President." And then 2 days later, I'm watching when Oswald got shot. And like, once again, this is all
I gotta say,
my life. What's that?
I got to ask you, Sam, what Tom, what was that like? I mean, to like 2 days later, you're watching live TV. This is like the biggest story ever. The president has just been killed. And on live TV, Oswald gets shot. What was that like?
This is the strange part. I feel kind of bad because it really didn't affect me that much then. Because I had by that time I had seen, you know, Marshall Dillon killing 20 guys on TV every week, and Elliot Ness shooting all these people. To me, it was just until I thought about it a little. To me, it was just another guy getting killed on TV.
Yeah,
and it was, which was really kind of sad.
No, but you were a kid, Tom.
I was a kid. I was fifth grade.
Yeah, you were a kid. But I got. I mean, that I'll tell you though, man. I can't. You know, you go back and you look historically at that. How must have the like adults who could process it? 2 days after the president is killed on live TV, Oswald gets shot. It's like, what in God's name is happening?
Well, you know, that was the '60s, and all the crazy stuff happened back then. But it was really strange. But before I let you go, I just want to tell you that I'm a teacher. This is in regards to what you were talking about before, and we have people in my school that I taught, and they can't call me by my first name.
I know. Isn't that? I mean, I can't do it.
It makes me feel about 1,000 years old, but it's real. I just say, you can call me Tom. You can call me Tom. Says, no,
I can't do it, man. I can't do it. All right, Tom, thanks.
All right, bye.
Take care. It's so weird. When I went back to my high school, they insisted that I call them by their first name. I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
I couldn't do it.